Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Many are asking today if Europe's relationship with the United States has been irrevocably changed after Donald Trump's 90-minute phone call with Vladimir Putin, when the American president appears to have conceded to most Russian demands to bring an end to their invasion of Ukraine. As it stands, it seems Ukraine will not be joining NATO, will cede control of Crimea to Russia, and there will be no US military involvement to keep the peace. In a moment, I'll speak to John Everard, former British ambassador to Belarus, and also to Bill Browder, who's CEO of Hermitage Capital and a long-time critic of Vladimir Putin. But first, two Ukrainians living in Ireland gave their reaction to our reporter Brian O'Connell on the latest developments. First up in this clip, we'll hear from Marina, who's been living here for 3 years, followed by Ukrainian journalist Mila Bortok, who's living in Cork.
The main problem is that Ukrainian people will be very disappointed. That is there was great hope after Trump elections. I know, like, people were waiting for something good, for eventually, hopefully, ending of this war. But Trump election, first, it will cause a second war or civil war in Ukraine. Siblings were thinking, why people dead? What was the reason of their deaths, disability, and so on, if still territory won't be returned? So why? It just will cause a civil war between Ukrainians inside Ukraine. That is the main problem, I'm thinking, if territory won't be returned. That's what I feel.
It is probably only the Eastern European countries and Baltic states that can really feel the breath of Russia, and they clearly understand, if Ukraine fails, they are next to go. This looks like a deal for Ukraine without Ukraine. Seeing US stepping aside and EU divided on what to do next is just a real green light for Putin to desire more. Ukraine will be just a first step on Russia's plan to draw a new map of Europe.
Concerns expressed there by Ukrainians living here in Ireland. As I said, Bill Browder is with us along with John Everard. So, Bill, we know there how some Ukrainians in Ireland feel about these overnight developments. How do you think Vladimir Putin is today?
I think he's dancing the jig. They're popping the champagne in the Kremlin. This is a major, major win. Vladimir Putin launched a unprovoked war of aggression against a peaceful neighbor 3 years ago, killing many hundreds of thousands, if not more, people, took over a territory. And now all of a sudden, he's been granted an audience by the most important person in the free world, the President of the United States. He'll be meeting him in Saudi Arabia. The conversations are basically outlined in a way that supports a lot of his objectives. I think he's going to be very happy.
Is Europe, though, not guilty of an over-reliance on America over the years? Here we have a democratically elected president now doing what he said he would do during the campaign. And Europe was relying on having a benign, at worst, president, a very supportive president at best in the United States ad infinitum.
Well, I think this is a wake-up call to Europe that if Europe doesn't band together and act in unison and in unity to protect Ukraine and to further our own interests here in Europe, then a lot of very terrible things are going to happen, some of the things that your previous speakers were predicting. I mean, I think that the Baltic countries are next to go. NATO will basically dissolve. And we'll be back to a 1930s type of world where, pre-World War III type of situation.
I was reading some analysis this morning from the States, which said it is fair for Donald Trump to ask why Europe hasn't taken over its self-defense fully 80 years after the defeat of the Nazis. Do you agree with that, that it is fair to ask that question?
Well, I mean, I think that he's kind of trying to break everything all at once. I mean, it's one thing to ask the question. It's another thing to basically leave Ukraine, sort of throw Ukraine under the bus and throw Europe under the bus. These are things that need to be dealt with, quietly behind the scenes over a long period of time. It's not something you just do and you reward a murderous dictator, Vladimir Putin. By doing so, it not only harms the interests of Europe, but what are the Chinese doing right now? They're saying, well, I guess if we decide to take over Taiwan, nothing's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, you know, every man for himself now. And that's a very, very dangerous world to be living in.
Well, Bill, stay with us. I want to bring in John Everard. John, I know you've been listening to Russian media this morning. How are they reporting these developments?
It was sickening, Claire. I tuned in to one of the more nationalist Russian radio stations, and the commentators were literally chortling down their microphones. They couldn't conceal their glee. They seem to see this as game over. Effectively, one of them said that Europe will protest, but Europe is behaving, they said, rather like a staff of an office where the boss has just walked out and won't come back. And Europe will protest, but Europe doesn't have either the political will or the ammunition to do anything about the situation in Ukraine, followed by an outburst of laughter. It was frankly very uncomfortable listening.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. I mean, from Ukraine's point of view, what leverage do they have? I mean, can they continue to hold, for example, the Russian territory that they've seized without US military aid and so relying on support from the EU?
They probably can for at least a while. US military aid, remember, hasn't yet stopped. The funds allocated by the previous administration are still being dispersed and material is still being delivered. And recently, of course, the Ukrainians have expanded their bridgehead in the Kursk region. Also, we talk about the problems on the Ukrainian side. Remember that Russia, too, has big problems. It's not clear whether the North Korean contingent is still operational. There are doubts over the supply of drones from Iran. And the Russian side is getting old and tired. It's not all one-sided. But clearly, the withdrawal in the longer term of US support would be a terrible, terrible blow to Ukraine.
Mm-hmm. Bill, what do you believe the options are available now to Europe in terms of a response to this?
Well, there's one, what I will call a trump card. That is that when the war first started, about a week after the war started, all the major allies froze all of Russia's central bank reserves held in the West, about $300 billion of central bank reserves. And about $285 billion of those reserves are held outside the United States, so most of it's held within Europe. And so the entire leverage that Donald Trump here has is that he's going to cut off financial military aid for Ukraine. And so the way to solve this problem is for Europe to stop beating around the bush and to confiscate that money and to set up a war fund for Ukraine. And that would give the Ukrainians basically, you know, a 3 or 4 year runway to defend themselves. Mm-hmm. And at that point, Donald Trump can pound sand all he wants, but he can't dictate the outcome of this war. He can't determine how it's going to be played out. And at that point, the Europeans can basically sit back in the driver's seat and then negotiate a just peace, not an unjust peace, which is what Donald Trump seems to be suggesting.
I'm trying to think that, you know, what would be the consequences of doing that? I mean, what we see is America, which wants to become more isolationist, doesn't want involvement in these conflicts. So if you were to allow Ukraine access to that, to those funds, what we're not saying is that then you would have the United States defending Russia, because that's not what the United States want to do. They don't want to be part of this.
Well, then, you know, if Donald Trump's position is, you know, America first, well, and America alone, he can be alone. I mean, if Europe confiscates that money, which, by the way, is Putin's money, let Putin pay for the defense of Ukraine, then we're in a situation where the Ukrainians have the financial resources to buy the weapons they need. And, you know, and the only issue then is, would American defense companies be allowed to sell to Ukrainians? And it's hard for me to imagine Donald Trump, the deal maker, saying, well, actually, we don't want to do, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars worth of business. I don't see that happening. And so, Donald Trump, his leverage is the military aid to Ukraine. He's saying he's going to cut off that leverage and therefore Ukraine has to capitulate. And here's an easy way to say, no, Ukraine doesn't have to capitulate and Putin will pay for it via the money frozen in Europe.
And John, I just see the French defence minister is saying in the last few minutes that NATO now faces a moment of reckoning on its future. Do you think that this is that serious?
Yes, it is. That's not to say that NATO doesn't have a future, but quite clearly, one major NATO state reaching out unilaterally and giving Vladimir Putin, again, sickeningly, the credibility and the kudos of a meeting with the President of the United States is a strain on the alliance. Just in a few hours, the Ukraine contact group is meeting in Brussels with US Defense Secretary Hegseth, having made already some quite, many will say, unhelpful remarks in advance. I suspect that behind closed doors, there will be some very sharp words and some very frank talking.
Mm-hmm. Just looking then at what's likely to happen, the outcome of this. I mean, we know Russia has sustained heavy losses in Ukraine. If Vladimir Putin walks away having secured what he sees as a significant victory and manages to take that territory in Ukraine, particularly that which he took in Crimea in 2014, how quickly or slowly would he be able to regroup and threaten other neighbouring states?
I don't think anybody really knows that. Military experts differ. Some say a couple of years, some say 5 years. Certainly, he would not be in a position to launch a new attack on another European country immediately, but it might not be that long. The Lithuanians in particular are very, very worried about this very possibility. And I'm sure we'll be watching developments in Brussels extremely closely this morning.
OK, well, thank you both for joining us. That is John Everard there and also Bill Browder. Just bringing you some more details of what's been happening in Munich this morning. We know the Munich Security Conference is due to start tomorrow. World leaders have been arriving there. The US Vice President J.D. Vance, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and many others. But in the last hour, a car has driven into a group of people in Munich, leaving several people injured. This confirmed now by police. The newspaper, local newspaper Bild, the German newspaper, reports that 15 people have been injured. There is a large-scale operation underway. Police have confirmed that they were able to detain the suspected driver. They don't consider him to pose any further threat. Now, it appears to have affected people who are taking part in a demonstration linked to a strike organised by a union in Munich. Bringing you more details of that as we get it. We're going to take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.